Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Regan, and this is You Pick, We Watch, the podcast where you pick the movie and we take a deep dive into it, learning everything we can about your recommendation. Today, we're talking about the 1984 film and cult classic, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Yeah, wasn't this something?
It sure was something.
This is so 80s. Like, I don't think I've seen anything as 80s as this.
No, yeah, I think you got me there. The closest thing I can think of is just the reference in Ready Player One, where there's already a lot of 80s packed into that movie, but this is like straight from the source.
Yeah. It was a crazy, crazy adventure in there. We're going to try something new today, too. So before we start into the talking about the movie, there was some cool stuff that came out in the news this week about movies and stuff coming up. So we've decided to talk a little bit about those. And I have the three things that we talked about. So there's just a lot of cool stuff happening, even though like a lot of stuff is shut down right now and they're not filming. Or they're slowly getting back into things. They've announced a lot of cool things. So the first one that came up was Universal Studios is in talks with Top Gun Maverick director Joseph Kosinski to remake the 1996 natural disaster movie Twister. I mean, I think Twister is like a perfect movie on its own. I remember seeing it in theaters, and I loved it.
It's a great movie. I don't know how exactly a reboot would add value to, you know, just doing it again, but I'm open to it, you know, depending on who they get for it and all that. I'm open to it.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't think they do a lot of original movies anymore. So they have to pull from things. There was another tornado movie a few years back, 6 or 7 years back, that starred the kid from iCarly, the boy.
I'm trying to remember who that is, but it might be obvious, might not. I was never a huge fan of iCarly.
I had nieces and I watched little kids, so.
Okay.
But yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens there. The next one a lot of people are super excited for. Michael Keaton set to return to the actual DCU as Bruce Wayne in costume as Batman also in the new Flash movie that stars Ezra Miller in his solo film. Will be in a different universe as the Robert Pattinson Batman film, just kind of like how the Joker is set in a different universe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's three different universes going on now, maybe four even, because the original Suicide Squad and Birds of Prey are set in their own universe too. So,
yeah, I'm not even really sure how many universes DC knows are going on in their own franchise. But no, that sounds interesting. I know they were talking about making a movie based on the Flashpoint comic book arc, which is like the Flash somehow, like, again, I don't pretend to know how his powers work of like going so fast, you go back in time or into another dimension or something. But yeah, it was something really weird, like Batman was evil or something. Yeah. I really wish I could remember more about that, but I'm always excited to see Michael Keaton in new movies.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I really enjoyed him in Spider-Man Homecoming. Was it Homecoming?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that one, he was really good in that. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. And then the last one that I'm impartial to, I'm excited for this because I love Margot Robbie. So hopefully this goes through. Margot Robbie and the writer of Birds of Prey, Christina Hodson, are set to work on an all-new female-led Pirates of the Caribbean movie set outside of the Jack Sparrow ones. Still set in the same universe, but all new story, all new concept.
I'm on board for that.
Yeah. I thought the writing was great in Birds of Prey. So we'll see. All this is all rumor too. Obviously nothing is ever set in stone because I'm still waiting on my Gambit movie. So
Were you at Channing Tatum?
yeah, right. I would be
I
okay if they
actually
say no to him still.
yeah, fair. I actually heard two rumors over the past week.
Yeah.
One is that the Amazon Lord of the Rings series that they're creating. Are you a fan of Lord of the Rings by any chance?
I have seen them.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I'm a big fan, but I guess there was this rumor about how they're doing like a Aragorn prequel, which I was super nervous about, but turns out not the case. They're setting the story like 1,000 years before that, covering like entirely different stuff, which sounded awesome. But to boot, they're actually starting filming again in New Zealand, with like taking all the quarantine procedures, but should be ready by next year.
That's actually pretty cool. I liked the elves in those movies, so those are my favorite
Yeah, when
parts.
Tolkien was writing those books, you could tell that his like favorite race was the elves. They were like the perfect beings of that world.
Yeah. That was cool. What was the other one you heard?
The other one, which I'm not so hot on, is there's a rumor that there might be a Princess Bride remake.
Oh, I did hear that.
I'm
Don't
trying to
touch it.
remember which dude it is. It's one of the Jonas brothers, and I'm pretty sure his wife. Oh, Joe Jonas, and yeah, his wife. I cannot remember her name.
The
Anyway,
I want to call her Padme, I think, but I don't think that's her name.
Sophie Turner. That's who it
Oh, that
is.
one. The other one's married to like a Padma or something, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she's a like an Indian actress. I
Yeah.
cannot pronounce her name to save my life, though.
No. Yeah, Sophie
But
Turner
yeah.
is the new Jean Grey for everyone that doesn't know. If you're not X-Men, wasn't she in Game of Thrones too?
She sure was.
Yeah.
She was Sansa Stark.
Yeah. Lots of good stuff coming out, so or like coming up and people talking about things. So if you guys hear anything and you want us to talk about it briefly, you can always email us or talk about it on the Facebook page, which we tend to try to post random things about all kinds of movie stuff on there, which is kind of cool. So make sure you go and follow that. So now we will get into good old Buckaroo Banzai. And we'll see what happened in the eighth dimension. So he does a lot of stuff, but what he's a lot of different things. He's a adventurer, a brain surgeon, a rock musician. What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh man, it was somewhere between like ninja, comedian, and like musician. Somewhere in the three-part Venn diagram of
That could work. That could work. How close were you to becoming any of those?
Oh, so close. You wouldn't even believe it. So close. Almost.
Yeah.
In another life.
I wanted to be a professional athlete. I wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist.
There you go.
Obviously, that did not happen.
What type of Olympic athlete did you want to be?
I wanted to be on the U.S. women's hockey team, and I was the correct age. I remember in 1998, I was 14. So by the 2002 ones, I was hoping that I was going to be on that team. And I got as close as playing with the Olympians at camps. That was as close as I got. So,
That's closer than I ever got.
but yeah, it was obviously not a viable future option, but everybody should follow their dreams a little bit. So,
Exactly.
like I said, Buckaroo Banzai is an adventurer, brain surgeon, and rock musician, and his crime fighting team, the Hong Kong Cavaliers, must stop alien invaders from the eighth dimension who are planning to conquer Earth. So if that doesn't tell you what this movie was about, I will leave that to you.
Yeah, that's it's a little all over the place, but it comes together.
It does jump quite a bit. Like, there are times, like, there'll be times I was watching it and then I'm like, what just happened? Like, why am I seeing these people now? Or where did they come from?
Or what exactly is happening?
Also, and this goes to the time period that this movie was made, for it being very Asian-like, not a lot of Asians in this movie were cast in this movie.
I did notice that. They're like,
So,
yeah, Buckaroo is, half American, half Japanese. I'm like, I know who Peter Weller is. I don't believe you, but okay.
So when you watch it, just it's the time period. Don't be offended by it. Just go with it.
That probably the best advice you could give for this movie is just go with it.
Yeah, exactly. Which was like my initial reaction to this. Like I said, this is like as 80s as you can get. With the exception, like I felt like it was when I was watching it, I was like, wow, this is a lot like Big Trouble Little China. And that'll come into play later. But
Funny you should say that.
yeah. So if you haven't seen either, if you haven't seen Big Trouble Little China, I would watch that one first, and then watch this, in my opinion. But I wasn't expecting much because, it's an 80s movie that's really random. But I definitely found myself enjoying and laughing at the one-liners and having fun with it. So, like, I thought there were a few slower parts, but overall, the eccentricness of it kept me pulled in. So, and it the aliens actually reminded me of the aliens from They Live, the first movie we watched.
You know what? I did make that connection too.
What was your first? You just watched this like an hour ago, right? Or
I just wrapped up the movie, yeah, I'd say exactly 1 hour ago.
yeah. What was your thoughts? Immediate
So
first thought, what'd you think?
first thought is what is happening right now? Because they throw a lot at you pretty quick. No, it's not even a lot. It's like they throw a bunch of stuff at you with very little context. And if I didn't read the description of the movie before going into it, I would have even less of an idea of what's happening.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Absolutely. This movie actually has a really great cast too.
Yeah.
But it's the 80s, so it's really before all these people blew up, I guess. Some of them kind of did, but like the only thing I found weird was that the director, W.D. Richter, didn't really direct anything else ever. But he did write Big Trouble Little China. So if you feel it find similarities, that's part of it. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original Slither, and the 1979 Dracula.
Huh. That's a really interesting resume right there.
Yeah, it's a lot of horror, like practical effect horror.
That being said, there were some nice practical effects in this one.
Yeah, there were. The
But
whole, like,
look.
almost all of it.
Yeah.
The writer, Earl Mockrock, probably mispronounced his last name, but he only wrote three other movies, and he has no other credits at all for anything, which I thought was insane because I thought the writing was the best part of this movie.
I've got some information on that when we get to the trivia section of
Okay.
why it feels like it does, probably.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm excited to hear about that. Peter Weller, you've seen RoboCop, right?
Oh, yeah.
I have not yet, but I assume most people probably know him from RoboCop. John Lithgow. I first saw him. All right. There's going to be a little pause. Because we dropped the connection.
That's
But
never happened before.
hasn't. So I should be able to fix it, and it'll be fine. So ignore the pause after. think.
Most important information of the movie, Peter Weller, nothing.
Yeah. So John Lithgow was the Dr. Lizardo. I knew him from Third Rock from the Sun mostly. He did have Footloose come out in 1984 as well. So, but he's like huge. He's huge now.
He really is. He won an Emmy for being a villain in the show Dexter on Showtime. And
Yep.
that was probably the best season of that show too, because of him.
Yeah, that was a pretty good season. Ellen Barkin plays Penny. I know that name and I know her face, but I honestly looked through her movies and I could not figure out what else I've seen her in.
It's funny because the first time I saw her on camera, I knew she looked familiar. And you know when you squint like really hard at someone's eyes and you kind of like picture the rest of their face like as it is right now. I was like, oh wait, she was in Ocean's 13 and she's in that that TNT show, I think it is called something I can't remember and I've also never seen, but I hear it's really good.
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum plays New Jersey. He is a man who needs no introduction. What's your favorite Jeff Goldblum
Oh man, I don't even know. But off the top of my head, shooting from the hip, I'd say my favorite role of his in recent memory is in Thor Ragnarok because he's so crazy in that, and I absolutely am delighted to see him on screen in that movie.
Mine would have to be The Lost World, the sequel to Jurassic Park. And I don't know why. I just really liked him in that.
Well, I mean,
So.
here's a harder question. What's one of his roles that you don't like? I'm not sure I could pick one, you know? I don't think I dislike any of his roles.
That's true. Yeah. I even liked him when he was in Glee for a minute. So. I'm trying to think of other ones. Earth Girls are easy. He's not like Jeff Goldblum yet, really. It's weird. He doesn't act like Jeff Goldblum usually acts, so that one's kind of off, but
Jeff Goldblum.
yeah. But even I think that was even in the 90s, early 90s. So it was after this. And he's very Jeff Goldblum in this movie.
Yeah.
So
Do you think that Jurassic Park was like the defining Jeff Goldblum moment of like he's not going back to how he was before? That was like the creation of the lovingly eccentric Jeff Goldblum that we all know and love now.
I think it brought a new generation to him. And the people like our age were like, okay, this is what he's going to be, and we're going to make him that now.
Through force of
That's my.
will, this is what he will
Yeah.
become.
Yeah. Finally, Christopher Lloyd, who plays probably my favorite character name, John Big Booty, or Bootay, as he insists. He also is a man that needs no introduction. He had been on Taxi. Taxi had just ended. He was on that for like 5 or 6 years. And then in 85, Back to the Future came out. So,
It was weird to see him with like colored hair. You know, I only know him as like a white-haired man.
yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite role he's played?
Probably Back to the Future. That's what I know him from. That and Addams Family are the two things that I really know him from. But I did really like him in this movie too, if for no other reason than he keeps like correcting people on how to pronounce his last name, which is something I deal with on a regular basis when people call me Reagan all the time.
Yeah. I think mine would have to be Roger Rabbit, Who Framed Roger
Oh,
Rabbit.
forgot
But
about
he gave
that.
me nightmares in that movie.
Yeah,
But
me too.
still really good. There's a lot of other people in this too. Like there's the guy that played the accountant on Scrubs, right? He's in it.
Oh, was that him?
He plays one of the aliens. You only see him probably in like maybe 5 minute scenes, if that. And then there's another guy that is really familiar, but I can't remember his name. He was the other alien guy that was with them.
Oh yeah, that's exactly how I describe him too. Like I know I've seen him in like 100 things over the, like the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s. Could not tell you his name though.
Yeah, he's one of those faces.
On the other end of that, Clancy Brown is also in this as the character Rawhide. He's, at least from what I know him the best from, is he voices, he does a lot of voice work, but he voiced Mr. Krabs in SpongeBob.
Oh, I would not have known that.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, so there's a lot of people in this movie. Which is, I think, part of the reason now why it has cult status, because you go back and you watch these old movies with people that you love, and you're like, wow, look at this. Look at this time period. So,
Look at them before they were them.
yeah, it's like, it's watching them on their journey to becoming them, which is kind of cool.
Well put.
All right, let's go on to trivia behind the scenes. Any fun things that we've come up? Sadly, there were no Academy Award nominations for this movie, so
I was gonna ask you to start off with that. Like, how many Oscars does this baby win?
this is the first movie we've watched that has, besides maybe They Live, that
Yeah.
has not had a at least a nomination in something.
That's a good point.
So, all right, you go with one.
Okay. So, for the role of Buckaroo Banzai, did you know that both Tom Hanks and Michael Keaton were considered for that role?
I did not, but I could not picture Tom Hanks doing that.
Oh, me either. Michael Keaton, maybe, but I think they, in the end, had the right person for the job.
Yeah, the way Peter Weller like delivers his lines, it's very, I don't know, especially the line with wherever you go, there you are.
That was my favorite line of the movie. It's like it sounds so profound, but also could make as little sense as you would think it would. You know, it's, I don't know. Flip a coin, that's what it means.
Yeah, I didn't even know that this was the movie. I'm sure, I think it was set in something else, but I feel like this is the movie that gave it that line its like popularity, because I'm pretty sure it's said in one of the Austin Powers movies too. Now that I'm thinking about it.
You know, related to that, apparently in one of the Star Trek movies, maybe movie, maybe part of a show, didn't really specify, but it said that the quote, "No matter where you go, there you are," appears on a dedication plaque on the USS Excelsior.
Yeah. And
So,
Christopher Lloyd was in the Star Trek movie that had just come out before this. So
oh.
I wonder if they're connected. There's a lot, probably a lot of connections like that.
Same universe? Is
Yeah.
this the
There we go.
expanded Star
It's
Trek universe?
the ones all the Trekkies forgot about. John Lithgow, when he started talking, I couldn't tell if he was like trying to be Russian, German, Italian, like something, like, so I thought it was like a really awful Italian accent after I found out he was Italian. It was like cheapo Mario, you know, like bad, like awful Mario. But come to find out, his dialect coach was actually a tailor on the 20th Century Fox lot with a heavy Italian accent. His name is Roberto Terminelli, and John had Roberto speak his lines from the script onto a tape recorder, which he then used to practice his accent. And he actually gave him credit as a, on the movie as his dialect coach. And it's like, that Italian just gave everybody a bad name.
Well, given how it seems you feel about the accent, do you think that helped or just hurt? Like, for all his vocal coaching, does it seem like that paid off or not
I would
so
have
much?
just not said anything that he got it from someone like that he was working with a real person. Then he can blame it on something like him just being an American in the 80s. But
Hey. Yeah.
so yeah, I was like, ah, it's So I was like, wow, that's kind of like in nowadays time, it would be offensive and you wouldn't even like have somebody talk like that.
That seems about right.
Yeah. I like his name though, Dr. Lizardo.
A
Like,
lot of names in this are ridiculous. Like, also, how about the fact that like every alien's first name is John? That's actually really funny to me.
yeah, it's hilarious. And I have a list of my favorite ones. My favorite ones were John, Big Booty. John, Careful Walker. John, Chief Crier. My most favorite one was John Little John.
I did notice though.
John O'Connor. I was like, what is that, a Terminator reference? John Smallberries was hilarious. John Starbird, John Yahya. Like, there's a whole list of them, and it's hilarious.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Have you heard about the, I'm sure you've heard of it, but have you ever listened to like the War of the Worlds
Yeah.
thing? So there's that one scene where they're talking about it, and he refers to Orson Welles as the guy from the old wine commercials. This is a reference to Welles' popular television commercials from the 70s, which I want to find. For the Paul Mason Winery, now known as Mountain Winery, where he used the slogan, "We will sell no wine before it's time." In the early 80s, though, he was fired from it because he stated on a US talk show that he never drank any of the company's wine.
Oh, come on.
That's
Orson
funny.
Welles, what a dude.
Yeah.
I like how that was actually a plot point in the movie of his War of the Worlds radio broadcast was apparently like reporting that there was an alien invasion, and then I can't remember why, but it was like later dismissed as a hoax because the
Yeah.
aliens got to him or something.
Yeah, that was kind of funny when they're trying to figure everything out about it. Like, what if it
Yeah.
wasn't? What if it was a hoax? What if it really happened? It's great. Now one of the moments that we look forward to in every episode is when we reference Blade Runner. I did not know this before going in. These Blade Runner references just come to us. The original director of photography for the film, who we discuss is usually the cinematographer, was Jordan Cronin West, who famously shot Blade Runner. The filmmakers wanted their film to be rich in color and texture, for which Cronin West was specifically known. However, several weeks into the filming, the producers were replaced him. Against the wishes of the crew, including the director, in order to give the film its campy, flat visual appearance instead. Scenes shot by Cronin would still remain in the final cut, though, including the famous nightclub scene featuring the line that we've said, "Wherever you go, there you are." And do you think, can you notice it in the movie, the films, the scenes that Cronin would filmed versus the guy that they went with after?
Well, I will say that that nightclub scene did seem a little more like atmospherically alive than a lot of other scenes. So I could tell that there's a little bit of a difference, but I didn't know if that was like intentional or not.
I could see that. Yeah, I honestly didn't notice at all until I read that, and I was like, yeah, that scene does seem a little brighter almost.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually bookmarked that fact on my end, like in all
Always.
bolds, because I was like, oh, gotta bring up this Blade Runner fact.
It's a running joke. It's gotta be.
Yeah. So between his escape from the insane asylum and his ransom call, the movie's main villain, played by John Lithgow, isn't seen for more than 42 consecutive minutes. Basically, like over 40% of the film's runtime, which is kind of funny because I did end up forgetting exactly what he was supposed to be doing, which is an interesting choice. But I noticed that the guard that he kills on the way out is actually an actor from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul that I really came to enjoy. It was weird seeing him as like a young man instead of a bald old dude.
That's funny. Yeah, I read that and there was a time during the movie where I was like, why is he here all of a sudden? Like he just kind of popped up
Yeah.
and I was like, well, what just happened? How did we get to this point? And then I was like, that doesn't matter.
Just go with it.
Just go with it. During the filming, John Lithgow was so humored by the improvisation of Christopher Lloyd that during the pre-launch scene and the spaceship at the end of the movie, which is probably the most hectic, crazy part, I think, that kind of makes sense but doesn't make sense. Like the whole thing is just with it. So he breaks up laughing on camera as he's putting on his helmet. So I'd like to go back and actually watch that and see if I can catch it.
Definitely. I love it when stuff like that happens.
Yeah, like when they leave in things that weren't necessarily like improvised moments, like the scene in Django Unchained. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know what scene you're exactly talking about. Oh, wait, the Leonardo DiCaprio scene?
Yeah,
Oh, yeah, that was great.
that part. Like whether it's just getting that intense moment in time or letting comedic actors riff off each other, I think that's pretty cool. So.
Oh, this movie strikes me as one that's like really fun to make. Like, I feel like the whole cast had just like a blast shooting it.
Yeah, there was actually, according to the commentary on the DVD version, which by the way, there were so many rights issues trying to get this put back on DVD that I think that's why it was so expensive. Remember when I was like, it's like 20 or 30 bucks to even try to buy it. They had a lot of issues getting it back on DVD. But there's a commentary on it, and one of my favorite lines in the movie is when there's a I guess it's a chase scene, but it's a really slow chase scene.
I guess it's a chase scene. I feel like if you have to preface it by that, it might not be.
When they're trying to find Buckaroo after he's been taken, and they're trying to find Penny, and Jeff Goldblum and the other guy are walking around, and Jeff Goldblum's like, what's this watermelon for? Or why is there a watermelon there? And he's like, well, I'll tell you later. That whole scene was added because everybody wanted to see if like the producers and everyone were watching the dailies. And dailies in film are often viewed separately by producers and by studio executives not engaged in like the day-to-day production and to see what they are. And dailies are like they take all the raw footage from that day and just watch all the scenes. So they wanted to see if anybody was actually watching them.
I love that. It's funny when that scene happened, and they talked about the watermelon. For a second, I was like, I bet you that never comes back.
Yeah, I said
Oh,
the exact same thing when I
man.
was watching it. I was like, that's a throwaway line right there.
The DVD, I don't know, I guess bonus scenes? Or actually, I think it was a deleted scene. Jamie Lee Curtis actually played Buckaroo's mother in a flashback, but it was cut in the movie. But it was put on the DVD as a special feature. So I don't know exactly how much that adds to the story at all, but yeah, she, of all people, is in it.
That's pretty awesome because she was, I believe, coming off of Halloween by then, right?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find out when that one came up.
I think this was around the time when Halloween 3 Season of the Witch was premiering, and that movie didn't have her in it.
80. Okay, so okay, yeah, she was hot off of original Halloween was in 78. Oh, she did. She was in Escape from New York as the computer voice. She was
Huh.
uncredited in that. So that may have led into her knowing these people to get into that. She was also uncredited in Halloween 3 for she was a curfew announcer. So yeah, she was doing campy horror movies. So that would have been perfect.
Huh. You know, that speaking of kind of like working with people beforehand, I believe Jeff Goldblum actually was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and because he ended up becoming friends with the director, he was like given this role, which I think he turned down one of the prominent roles in Ghostbusters to be in this movie.
That's awesome. Speaking of things releasing and other people in other movies, it was originally scheduled to be re released on June 8th, 1984, but was pushed back to August 15th and only opening on 236 screens. But it opened against. This is like one of the worst openings you could go against. Star Trek 3, which also featured Christopher Lloyd, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Ghostbusters.
Oh,
Like, what are you
that's
gonna
a
do?
lineup right there. Wow.
Yeah. I couldn't find how much the budget was, the estimated budget was, but on those 236 screens, it only made $620,000.
Jeez.
It does say that it grossed in the US only 6.2 million. And it looks like that was half of its production cost. So maybe estimated production cost about 12 million. So that's
Okay.
awful.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But that's usually when movies gain their cult status years later.
Yeah, that's true. And you never know what movies you end up doing, like on a whim or whatever, that end up getting you recognized for future roles. Like allegedly, this movie helped Weller get his role as RoboCop.
Yeah.
I was
Yeah,
like, eh.
I could see that if that really happened.
Oh, you know that the final like credit scene in the movie where they're walking through like the empty LA like aqueduct area, and more
Yeah.
people from the cast, like more friends, keep gathering in around Buckaroo. So when it came time to film those end title sequences, the music wasn't ready to match with the scene. So the composer, Michael Boddicker, told the film crew to use, they were supposed to walk in time with the song, and he told them to use Uptown Girl by Billy Joel as a placeholder because it had the exact same tempo. So that means those scenes were filmed with Uptown Girl blaring from a boombox tied to the back of the camera truck.
That's hilarious. I could just all I'd want to do is strut to Uptown Girl.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think I could walk like they do. Is it ever said why Jeff Goldblum is dressed like a cowboy?
No, that's
Okay.
something I was so confused about.
I thought I was missing something.
Yeah, he's just dressed as a cowboy the entire movie, and there's really no context as to why or even like when he dresses up like that.
So weird.
But again, like that end credit scene there, apparently that was recreated for the end of the 2004 film by Wes Anderson, The Life Aquatic, with Steve Zissou, where Goldblum also appears.
Nice. I like when things come full circle.
Yeah.
I'm all done. I don't have any more really fun ones.
I just have two more. Wow, I always seem to have like two more at the end of these. So I guess Buckaroo, it So the character of Buckaroo is, I found like an either or thing online where he's either based on the like 40s pulp comic Doc Savage or on the like out and out press the accelerator to the floor nonstop kung fu movies of the early 70s. And the movie does kind of feel like just, you know, someone jammed the accelerator down and left it there. But Doc Savage is essentially just like Buckaroo in the sense that he's like an adventurer and a scientist and a musician, and oh, he also knows martial arts, and he's also like a neurologist. You know, it's like just all these things you keep like scotch taping onto their titles. So like same thing.
Yeah, I could see the kung fu stuff definitely.
Oh yeah. The last thing I have though is Kevin Smith apparently is a huge fan of the movie and wanted to make his own adaptation, but Amazon Studios indicated that there was a deal being negotiated to produce a series based on Buckaroo Banzai, and this was back in 2016, so there still might be a future for this title.
That'd be interesting. That'd bring a lot of I like Kevin Smith, but I like 90s Kevin Smith a lot.
Yeah.
A lot of his newer stuff kind of falls flat for me, and I don't know if that's because my taste in comedy has changed, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, you want to move into thumbs up, thumbs down, sideways?
Absolutely.
So to me, this is a movie you throw on to have a good time. This movie makes no sense. It's just fun. You go with it. It's not a super short movie or a really long movie. It's about 103 minutes, which didn't feel like too bad. Definitely did not feel like Blade Runner 2049, but I digress.
Maybe on your
there
end.
Yep. There is enough weirdness to keep you entertained. But if you're not a fan of weird 80s movies like Big Trouble in Little China, or They Live, like I felt a lot of similarities with this and They Live kind of. You might not have fun with it if you're not a fan of those, but it is great to see some of the best actors, like I said, in our time, in an early movie before they became super famous. So, I'm glad that this was suggested to us by, I believe, Aaron S. And I'm going to give it one thumb up.
I will say that I do enjoy talking about the movie, but as far as watching it for the first time, I wanted to like it more than I did.
Fair enough.
So yeah, this might be another one where we diverge because I would actually give this one thumb down.
That's fair.
But yeah, it is, it's a pretty light movie. It's fun. It's just turns out not my cup of tea.
Yeah, absolutely. There'll be those, especially with this other movie that got suggested this week, which is a perfect segue. My wife thinks that she has jokes and finally got on her email and emailed us, and she says, "My pick for you guys is the 2007 horror comedy all around terrible movie Teeth." And if you were alive in 2007, 2008, you heard about this movie. So I told her, I said, "You know, I don't like gory horror movies." She's like, "Yeah, but you're gonna watch it." Like, oh, fine. So,
As soon as you messaged me, my first thought was like, why would you do this to us, Mrs.
yeah.
Close's wife? Why?
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that that does not get picked this week.
Oh my God,
And
me
I'm
too.
really crossing my fingers for the mummy. But we're gonna let Regan spin the wheel.
All right. One, two, three. So not the mummy, but I do think you'll still be happy with it. We
All
got the
right.
fifth element.
Yes. All right, one of my movies finally got picked.
After all these years.
It's been 80 years. Awesome. Fifth Element, that is an awesome movie. I can't, I've been wanting to rewatch it, and I'm just like, ah. All right, awesome. So, we'll be watching that. And I was gonna say something, and I forgot. Oh, our 10th episode is coming up in a couple of weeks, and we've been talking about things. So hopefully we'll have something fun to go on. I got some stuff I kind of want to test out to see if we can get do you have a Zoom?
Yeah.
The Zoom call? Okay. Maybe we, because I know you can record on that. So maybe we can record that and put like a special episode thing up on the Facebook page.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
that might be fun. I think that's gonna do it all today. I know this episode got cut in half, and so again, ignore. Sorry about that. And it's a little shorter because I do have to jump on another call here in a minute. So I'm gonna let Regan take us out.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in, guys. Next week, we're going to be discussing the 1997 film The Fifth Element, picked for us by Jess. Remember, you can help select the movie we watch next by emailing the podcast at youpickwewatch@gmail.com. You can also follow the podcast on Facebook at youpickwewatch to get immediate updates, recommendations, and just other cool stuff to know about movies. If you like what you hear, a quick 5-star review would really help the new podcast. I'm Regan, and you can find me on Facebook at author Regan Brooks and also Instagram by the same handle.
And I'm Jess, and you can find me on Twitter at RadManMal. And yeah, we will catch you guys next week for the Fifth Element. Make sure you get your multi-pass ready.
Excellent.
Bye, guys.